trying to say that's not covered by McLuhan?
Who's trying to say what? Oh, yeah, okay. I got you. Go for it.
I'm still talking about the electronic music that, that Lauren's describing.
The and, subculture.
The experience, not the experience and the culture together. It sounds as if music is the ground for it. And if the music is the ground for it, what is the figure for it?
Well, you're saying for it wrong. What you're saying, this music is the ground for fill in the blank, is what you're asking, right?
Well, first of all, I'm asking, is the music the figure or the ground? For
okay.
The experience.
Okay, well, I say the ground is AP pressure. So you take the old discontinuity, multi-level tactile massage of the AM world, and that, and call that music, and that is the anti-environment to the AP pressure. So that's taking old ground and becomes a figure. You know, art is a figure retrieving the old ground in a new way to reflect the actual ground. So the actual ground is AP pressure. You need a break from that. So the anti-environment is this subculture music. So music is a figure countering the ground of AP. And see, that's how you keep it simple. You see what I'm saying?
Does that line up with your experience, Lauren?
Yes. I would say that in terms of, I would say that the figure and the ground, there is no direct, there is no direct figure and ground. I mean, like, the DJ is the figure, but that's like, any kind of time you go see live music, the ground, I think it's both. Like, and honestly, like, in the way I understand it, like, it's like this music is the massage in the way that it amalgamates the figure and the ground, or they are interchangeable. Figure and ground are both, like,
right. It's the old figure ground. Since we're cyborgs the last 50, 60 or more years, you have to have the human figure and the technical ground together. So we have different figure grounds, over, like my chart, over the last 100 years. So the figure ground of the DJ doing the Android meme is in any environment to a capital G ground of the present, which will, the AP over AM, will become a figure ground as any environment. Later, under I would say under ionic conditions,
right?
Because the pressure on the AP, that's what our products relieve.
Right.
Right.
Okay. I would say that interesting. Like, you brought up country music, and I would say that the figure is the old ground of country.
Well, there's been
nowadays.
Many grounds. You know, there's the TV
like
ground.
The old ground. I mean, the old ground in terms of work hard, raise a family, don't expect too much, be satisfied with what you got.
Okay, that's the industrial environment, hardware industrial world. The hard world,
yes.
Don't expect much, work hard, show up, be a robot, and you'll get cancer eventually and die.
Exactly. That is what country music promotes.
Right. So that's the old industrial kinetic. We call that the kinetic world to keep it limited to the senses. That is so. Now, those people who are into country music, they are texting with their kids and everything. They're living totally up to date like everybody else, quadraphenic. But for some reason, their concept, their astrology sign, attracts them to that old romantic image of chemical body in industry. And Trump is playing off that. One of the things he's playing off is to retrieve that. I don't think, what do you say about that? How much, it's maybe this life in the slow lane. there's a lot of people who just don't, aren't, quote, informed or are able to keep up with the images of what is supposedly going on. They're not reading the New York Times. And for them, it's a general iconic image of the old days of a job. It was better than floating in the iPhone world and having nothing to anchor on. So we can assume that people by temperament or astrology sign or haven't been massaged in hyper-media urban environments, that slower world, life in the slow lane, is what shows a slow image of hardware as their relief image.
It is definitely it is absolutely the slow life. It is the easy road. It is the satisfaction with what you got. It is the, you got to have beer on a Friday night because working is really hard. Working sucks, but you know, you got to do it because, the greatest.
You're a slave. You're a cyborg slave.
Yeah, it's like the slavery. It's like American cultural slavery, but I think a lot of people like it because it gives them the excuse to not have to question anything.
Well, they have to question at work whatever the question pressures are. They just don't have the talent, habit of engaging in leisure activity, analyzing things like we're doing now. They just don't do that, never did it, from another planet. It doesn't mean they're any less in being in terms of general feeling happiness, but more and more they seem to be getting fucked up because they're all on heroin now, is the street myth. Now, McLuhan says the medium is massaged, and James Joyce could operate in any cultural mode he wanted to. At least that was the fantasy of McLuhan. And McLuhan's fantasizing about himself. He can go into any environment, and he's okay with it. I can generally do that, and I express it in the music. I can listen to jazz. I can listen to country. But I'm not forced to stay there. That's the freedom part. The worker is forced to stay. Like Jean kind of goes to the pool hall, hangs out in that environment. She's thinking differently than them, but she still likes it.
For me, it was a way to get in touch with where I was, where I grew up.
Well, that's retrieving your chemical body.
It's like the one thing that I could do. I mean, I worked at a metal shop, you know, I was just like, this is my life right now. Let me get into it, you know? It's like, okay, yeah, sure. So that's what I was feeling. I now don't listen to it nearly as much.
Well, you're in a different job role. You're in L.A. and you're doing software consulting or something. You know, you're not working in a factory.
No, I'm not working in a factory. It's true. It's cool. I see its validity. I also used to attract people because the whole thing used to be like, hey, I like every music except country music. That's what everybody used to say, right?
Yeah.
And the older they get, the more they like the country music.
Right.
Some of these people that hated country music. It's kind of funny, in my opinion, to see that.
Well, maybe it's because they get on medication and they go into the slow lane.
It's mostly people that are onto the slow lane. It's when you're young and you have the ambition, you don't want to necessarily live the country life, right?
You don't want to be in the slow lane.
When you go to school in a small town, do you have those people that don't expect to leave, don't want to leave, never plan to leave, that listen to country music ever since they discovered country music and do through high school and then do exactly what they plan to do, which was nothing, when they graduate? And then there's all those other people that, like, totally have all the ambition, and then they realize how hard it is, and then they grow gradually move back down to – the level that they were brought up in, and they seem to embrace country music in a later time in life.
So, you know, me, Ryder, and Gail, and Carolyn, we were fortunate enough to be able to keep moving with the at least ideal levels of changes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't stay in the little town. That's ridiculous. So we're actually metaphysically promiscuous and ready for anything new and interested in it and feel we can handle it.
Right.
And, you know, there's lots of people. That's the urban world of Toronto against the slow rural world, which voted in Doug Ford.
Yeah. Too true.
And I don't think there's not enough appreciation of that dialectic in the urban citizen. They're too busy defending their weak front, their fragile insecurity, and so they get totally outraged that the rural guys, the slow lane, got their guy in, you know? That why not be a little bit fair about it? Let them have the guy for 10 years and then put Bob Ray in or somebody, you know, to be.
They're very patronizing. They're very, very patronizing.
Yeah.
They have a patronizing superiority complex that just is, like, impenetrable.
Yeah. So here's what's interesting. They, younger and 30s and 40s, they're doing great. They're in the fast line. Everything's great. Now, it's a little more insecure now, but over the last 20 years. But then they bump into Carol's world. They fucking get magnesium deficiency. And then they're suddenly sick. And then they ain't so fucking savvy anymore. Now they're in trouble. You know, the urban people.
Yeah, we've seen that all. We see that regularly now.
Yeah. And, but there are people, the ones that don't get sick carry on with their arrogance. Now, since the dumb people, the slow people, aren't trying to understand the city people aren't trying to understand that, so each side is forced to remain rigid in their fortress and defend their lifestyle, their myth. And that can't be resolved.
It's true. It's true.
So I would say understanding in the mortar world.
High school.
What's Gail? What'd you say?
It all starts in the Grimsby High School 20 years earlier.
Oh, yeah. That's what Zappa's thesis was in the 60s. American life is high school. Never gets beyond the high school dialectics and dichotomies and tensions. It's the responsibility of, quote, the ascending person to actually get like Joyce and be able to go, or like McLuhan, get in different modes. So understand the different dynamics. You may not be able to make a movement out of it, but it's part of your own personal slack, poise, and understanding and overlaying of what's going on. It creates a detachment because you understand it. You're not identifying with one side or the other and really worried about it and defending one side or the other.
Yeah, and Lauren gets that detachment from moving to L.A.
What'd you say? He moves to L.A. and missed the first part.
And gets that detachment.
From Canada, you mean?
Or from the high school.
Oh, yeah. And see, that's the mobility, the mobile versus the not mobile. The ones who stay in the little towns. And he's moving around. He's being mobile. He's being mutated, alienated.
I can't even last 6 months in L.A. without making plans to go all over the world. Yeah.
Right. See?
Good.
So you're addicted to your mobility.
Yes.
And that's your requirement. Just like the slow people require their pool hall bar experience on the weekend. So there's a great ecology happening. But in the middle, that would be Pauline Alvarez, the middle zone of the between the ultra and the infra, is the confusion fighting contrast world of politics and jobs and wars and drug dealing and losing your job, gaining your job, winning a trophy, not, you know, the Paul Adu world. It's in the middle. It's in the noise realm.
It's in the noise of stasis.
The noise what? Stasis?
The noise of stasis, yes.
Stasis, right.
The noise of stasis.
Yeah, S-T-A-S-I-S.
It's like static.
Yeah.
Does it sound like static, Renner?
Yeah, like noise. It's like what they call noise in music. It's
yeah, but static noise is on like on a radio. You got...
Yeah, yeah. Not tuned, but just getting close, but not there.
That's static? S-T-A...
Yeah.
S-T-A-T-I-C, static, versus stasis.
That's a pun we just made.
Yeah, that was good. I think
radio
was...
static and geographic static.
Yeah. There's no status like static.
Right. So Gail, you're making music, whatever you're making and who you're speaking to, is a small audience, and you're targeting their biases or interests and preferences and then figuring out a stance of prodding them or not, you know?
No, I'm not. I don't have an audience.
No, you got invited. No. You had an audience for a few minutes.
Come on now.
That's a bad way to
use speech to create.
Pardon? I couldn't hear you, Lauren.
Speech creates.
Speech creates.
Right. So don't say shit like that.
I was trying to... That was too much of an oversimplification. What I was thinking when I said that was the music is following its own trajectory, a little bit like those math researchers we were talking about 3 hours ago. And it isn't pre-formatted to suit one audience or another. But...
It's like you're talking to yourself.
No, mathematicians weren't talking to themselves.
Oh, okay. They thought they weren't talking to themselves because they had the print ground. Now they are talking to themselves. Every discipline is.
If DJ's ride in through Banff National Park was right, then this is a mathematician of sound. Then I'm exploring things on an abstract level that doesn't have an outside goal.
Yeah, but if someone suddenly came along and said, this would be great, we're going to feature it on Chum Radio every day, you might get an interesting populist support. You don't know. You haven't had your music go into the public.
Well, the things I've been working on recently are kind of changing, kind of undermining anything I thought of in the past, because it seems to me that the pieces should be really long, like an hour long or something, or even longer.
Like these DJ pieces I'll put out there.
Right.
You listen to mixes that hours long.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's the kind of place where I think it might be going. And if it has a beat, it's a very eccentric beat, because it's created by different technologies than the kind of beats that we normally hear.
Yeah, it sounds like you're in the slow lane at the high end of sophistication. Like, you have to have an hour of time to do Gail's composition.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to, but the piece itself should be that long, but anybody can always just go in and hear a second or two of it.
Right. So is there a CBC doesn't offer a show to broadcast your stuff, does it?
No, but I don't think it would work over the radio. I don't even think it would work over the computer. I think it has to work over a multi-speaker sound system in a specific physical location.
Okay, so it's for the chemical body.
And the imaginal body.
What's that?
Well, I think she's trying to say the mystery body.
Well, the
chemical body has imagination. That's part of the chemical body, the imaginal.
I think the astral body is pretty imaginal too, right?
Yeah, yeah. It probably the chip body is not imaginal. In the music
realm. It's about multiple truths. It's about the plasticity of truth.
Which is, the chip or Gale?
Yeah, the chip.
Yeah. So, okay, so Gale's targeting the chemical body with a metaphysical mathematical promiscuity. Write that down. I think you can use that.
You calling my Gale a sonic slut?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yep. Well, you're sort of that over in the art world.
That's a great title for your next album, Gale.
Write it down. Don't forget it. What was it?
Metaphysical promiscuity.
Yeah, but there was a word before metaphysical, wasn't there? Metaphysical. No, it's not just metaphysical promiscuity. It's something. What was the third word? Did we lose it?
Sonic slut.
No, that's your two words. Well, I said something. I knew I didn't want to say metaphysical promiscuity. So, sonic, musical, metaphysical promiscuity? Is that what I said?
Yeah, that's right.
Metaphysical sonic promiscuity.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I said mathematical. That's what it was. Metaphysical, mathematical, or mathematical, metaphysical promiscuity. And here's maybe Jason. Is that Jason out there in British Columbia?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, this is the kind of, I mean, Jason's probably in ecstasy. He loves this kind of talk. How long have you been listening?
Yeah. Only 10 minutes.
Well, that's enough. So did we say, do you get the phrase, mathematical metaphysical promiscuity? Is that what we said?
Okay, so what about indiscrimination?
Something along those lines, yeah. It wasn't, I don't know exact wording, but you said, yeah, mathematical and metaphysical.
Yeah, we know promiscuity. We know mathematical was in there. We don't know if it was metaphysical or musical.
No, it was metaphysical.
Carolyn says metaphysical, mathematical, promiscuity. Okay, write that down, Jane.
Instead of promiscuity, use the word indiscrimination.
No, it's by metaphysical, mathematical promiscuity by sonic slut.
All right.
That's your new label, Gale. Sonic slut.
No, it's terrible.
That is not a good way to go out in the world.
No.
All right. Anyway. What audience are you saying wouldn't like that? The high-end slow lane?
Yeah, I guess you have to define your audience.
Yeah, the pool hall crowd love that. They like Sonic Slut. So, who is Gale appealing to if that wouldn't fly?
Hang on, Lauren. The Me Too generation Democrat women have taken to doing group nude photographs to urge people to get out to vote.
Group nude photographs?
Yeah.
Of women?
Of themselves.
In groups?
Yeah.
And
so this is theirs. I mean, what?
What they're offering themselves pornographically as a reward to get out and vote?
Yeah. How ironic is that? So sonic slut.
Has already been taken. already been done.
She says it's already been taken care of. Somebody's already got that label.
Okay.
Well, just put Sonic Slut Squared.
Well, it sounds like the Me Too movement is screaming, Me Too.
Yeah.
Urban Dictionary, a Sonic Slut is a super hot girl that works at Sonic, like the burger joint, and dates and bangs all of the employees.
Wow. And why are they called Sonic?
Because that's the name of the franchise.
Oh.
Sonic. Yeah.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's good for the Southwest. Deep South, that's where Sonics are at. Good stuff. Yeah. Anyways.
Well, Is Gail appealing? Do you get that, Gail? Sonic Slut Squared abstracts it. So I think that's acceptable.
No, I don't. I think we're going to have to put it on hold.
Well, just call it Gail Young. By Gail Young.
Yeah.
Well, is her piece is like more, like she said, like more needs to be like an hour long. So is it like, can it be live, or is this more of like background music for an activity that you're going to be doing for an hour?
It's live, right, Gail?
It can be both. Or
it can be both, yeah. Like what kind of a live environment? Like at a club, or are we talking about like a gallery?
No, gallery. Yeah. Gail's in the art gallery world, the university auditorium world.
I describe her as a non-institutionalized avant-garde. How did I word it the other day?
Oliverocyte. She's an Oliverocyte. She's trying to get you to listen.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it must be hard to get an audience for an hour.
Yep.
Yeah, that's why she says you can only 5 minutes is acceptable.
Yeah, she's
Non-institutionalized sounds like a non-institutionalized person with a mental illness of some kind.
Yes. It demands an audience. Demands to be noted.
Okay. Non-institutionalized what?
Interloper. Interloper is the term.
Interloper.
She's a member of like the non-institutionalized Sonic avant-garde.
Unknown's Anonymous.
Oh, she's not unknown, actually.
Right.
There is a large level of cult following behind it. It's surprising how many people check out her not-made Facebook page.
If there's a profile, are they urban sophisticates, people?
Yes.
Into art?
Yes.
Art is the elite religion of the urban sophisticate.
Right.
So Gail's a high priestess in that cult.
Hallelujah.
She definitely has her own, definitely. Yeah, sure. Like, she's got a little alcove in the big cathedral. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she's like the homeless person.
It's a pilgrimage. It's a pilgrimage. The people who go to the cathedral go to her alcove, not the greater cathedral.
Yeah,
they
for rustic.
The rest of the cathedral afterwards.
For the Grimsby mood.
That's a really sad association.
The Grimsby ambience. But that's what it is, Gail. Look how tiny. Modular, insular, cellular, your world is. I'm not saying that's bad, but there's many other dimensions going on. It's amazing that anybody can get any attention of any economic strength, unless you go big teenage mainframe Taylor Swift world.
Well, you know, Taylor Swift did write a song called 22, and she's like, I don't know about you, I'm feeling 22. Things like happy, free, confused, and lonely at the same time. You know, that is, she has claimed the number. Also, named an album after the year I was born, because it's the same one she was born at. Got lots of stuff going on here.
1989, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But, wow. Now, she tries to be nice to her audience, to have human scale. She goes and surprises her fans and gives them a little present.
Mm-hmm. It's good. You got to touch your fans. Not too much, though, or else you'll end up like Buddy. Yeah.
There's so much expression going on. You know, this is way beyond the Bauhaus program, as McLuhan used to say. This is way beyond anybody's statement of what's going on in society. I mean, the people that have audiences, the different variety of activities within the four or five bodies that have audiences is incredible. We're hyper, what's it, Baudrillard called, the ecstasy of communication. That's what's going on.
Yeah.
And you can't, it's no point calling it theater, art, sport, game, hypnotism, addiction. None of those terms are, you can't categorize it verbally or even literally. It's no point. It's inadequate.
Yeah.
So in a way, you wake up every day and pick a multi-leveled pill you're going to take. And that's the media you're going to engage.
It's your quadrophenic capsules.
Yes, quadrophenic capsules.
Right, every morning. You take two with water and sea salt.
Yeah, and you can't take, even say it's every morning, since people live at different shifts.
Right.
So
you take every fourth morning.
What?
Take one every fourth morning, the quadrophenic part.
Right. Yeah, so that includes violence, you know, terrorism, car accidents, all, it's incredible what's going on. And to watch TV and to watch the news is really narrow-minded. Being informed in those terms is narrow-minded. It's better not to look at a TV, but just imagine all that's going on.
I was living in a environment like that. It was brutal. I just decided.
Environment like what? Which one are you referring
to? The TV environment.
Like it was, when was that? When was that brutal?
Just now. I just got out of there like on November 1st. But you know, it was just this one roommate that he was just like, he was just listen to NBC all day long, every day. And then,
wow.
And then at night, he'd usually, like, come out of his room. Like, he worked in his room. He's, like, a consulting – he's a recruiter for big CEOs for big companies and stuff like that.
Right. So he's in the business world, and he must keep track of the news of MSNBC, the financial news. He has to be on top of that, right?
Yeah, but they didn't really talk about the financial moves much. It was just like they would get together in the living room and just start talking about America. It was just like, oh, my God, I hated it so much. It was so brutal to listen to. It was very,
well,
very
they good. Talk about America, but that's them translating into the chemical body, their TV body main experience of monitoring MSNBC.
Oh, yeah, and it was incessant. It was all day long. And it was,
well, he got paid to do that. To get paid, you have to specialize. That's what he specialized in.
It's true. But what I didn't have to do was pay to share it with him.
But you had to, because that's all the living space you had.
At the time, yeah.
Yeah, that would be a drag to have an imposed ambience around you. So what did you do with it?
It's an imposed. It's an imposed ambience of nonness in a lot of ways is what it was. It was a potential and the lack thereof in actualization, in almost all of it. Everything around where I was that. It was a very 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 tough place to exist in. But yeah.
Yeah, you saw the struggle of the chemical body too much.
It was unbelievable. Like, one of my roommates just like, oh, my God, there was not, it was just really tough. It was just like, I just don't even understand why these people are in my lives right now. Like, if I had any choice, I wouldn't even know any of these people or ever meet them.
Okay, so what did you say, this one guy, what did he do? You didn't give a detail.
Oh, they would just get together solemnly and solemnly discuss the state of America, and at night in the living
room. Okay, now listen to this. Here, that supports a thing I've been saying lately. We can only talk in the general because too much specificity is going on. Millions of specificities that you don't know about. So everybody discusses Trump because that's the most general symbol. So if they're talking about America, that's generalizing, you know, and people 100 years ago didn't sit around generalizing, I don't think, about America. They didn't know about it. They just knew their little town. They might have gossiped about the people in their town, but they didn't generalize. That's part of the discarnate experience of being abstract. Generalization is conversational abstraction.
Yeah.
You're not being specific, and you can't be, and there's really no content in the generalization. They don't apply to anything. What's America?
There was also no discussion. There was also no discussion. There was just like a collective sympathy through the similar perspective, and just like
similar signaling. Yeah, what do they call that? Empathic signaling. They signal to each other that they have the same bias.
Yeah, basically. But it wasn't even like, I just was like, oh, why do I have to be part of this right now? Oh, man. That's all.
Well, because, now that's what you could have, with my consulting, I could have gotten you to have a better attitude towards it. You could have made an art project out of it. Because you would recognize what they were doing, everybody else is doing. They're all generalizing. I mean, you know, we're worrying about America. Look at what America's made up of. 1 billion activities. There's nothing to generalize. Too much. But people do need to have to simplify it for their mind.
It wasn't – I'm not mad that I was really there. I'm acting, like, way more mad than I was in the actual time. Like, what I did was just, like, silently observe it and just be like, wow, all right, cool. Yeah, just like say nothing because that was
no, crazy. No. You are not confronting your bias that you projected in there. Like, wow, cool, or good generalizations, but not appropriate here. What is it that you were lacking to understand it, to appreciate it, or to exploit it?
What was I lacking?
Yeah, in your perception. Would you be allowed to engage with them?
No.
Okay. Okay. All right. You had a stigma. You were a house slave or something.
Like
unemployed slave.
To the point where I would say something about, like, to this one guy, I would say something positive about a place in Canada, and he would immediately find a place in America that did it better. And I'm like, and he's like, you know, you don't need to go to Canada for that. We could do it down in San Diego. We can go over here. You can do that. You know, blah, 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 blah. I'm like,
hey, you know what the pattern is there? He is floating in his job, in his room all day, and he comes out and puts on chemical body contrast. He whatever you say, he's going to counter. That's his idea of a sport, a verbal sport with you.
It was a verbal sport. It was like the way people follow sports scores was the way he followed politics. Like,
right.
It's like,
And it's just like, it was, he's miserable. He hates his job. He has no passion. He doesn't know what he wants to do. It's all good. I mean, it all makes total sense. I mean, I just, I would play with them a little bit when I felt like it. I would counter their things, and I would say different things. Like the one roommate was like, "Well, you never know. I mean, there could be a hurricane tomorrow, and then blah 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 blah." And I'm like, "I don't know what world you live in, but we're not gonna have a hurricane here tomorrow in my world." And she's like, "Well, there's nothing you can do about it." And I'm like, "Well, not with that attitude." And then like I would like walk away. Eventually, she would just like stop interacting. Like it was like. It wasn't like we got into arguments. There wasn't an engagement. Like if I would say something counter the way she saw the world as this limitless, like limiting place where you had no choice but to be where you are and you couldn't change that. If I said anything like that, she wouldn't get mad. She wouldn't get offended. She would just like her interaction would cease. Like she would just stop hearing, stop interacting, and then move, not even move. Just yeah. It was so strange. Yeah.
I thought it was a guy you were talking about.
I'm talking to about a few roommates. It's another.
Oh, okay.
It's another one of the roommates.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was people in jail forced to interrelate, and they certainly didn't see anything exploitable or worth their friendship in you, and you didn't see it in them.
Right.
They had different social goals. So it's almost like keep being slightly abrasive so they don't get involved with you.
Yes.
And that would be acceptable in that situation.
Is what I did.
Yeah, it's naturally irritating to be in that situation. I'm sure glad I didn't have to do that for much.
6 months.
Wow.
Yeah. It was pretty savage, but it's like, whatever, you know, it was what it was. I did the best that I could with what I had. Yeah.
Did they have any interest in what you did? Any of them?
Yes, I think so. I mean, the one guy that lived there too, he was like, he's a musician that like, was never really able to take any of my advice, but would always ask my opinion, but never heed it.
Right.
He would have his like kind of lame idea, and then I would like not say that his idea was lame, but I would like illustrate why it's boxing him into a world that he doesn't need to necessarily box himself into, and then give him an alternative. And then he'd be like, "Oh yeah, that's a great idea." And then next day, he would have done exactly what he was going to do anyways. And I'm like, okay, like, why do you bother wasting my energy to try to give you a good idea? Like, I actually had to think about how to make your thing good, you know? It was a waste of my energy.
No, he was being phatic.
No. Yeah.
Carolyn does it all the time. Carolyn states a problem, and I give her a great answer, and then she doesn't apply it. And then I find out later that I shouldn't have really suggested anything, just listened to her problem.
Yeah, just said, "Oh no, that's a great idea, man. Absolutely do that. You should totally start another record label in LA from absolutely nothing. That is what you should do. That is a great idea, man. Absolutely." Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So is Gail Reiner still there?
Yeah. Just barely though. It's 3:30 here, and I'm slipping.
I think we've run the course here. Lots of good stuff there for you.
Yeah, it was good night, man.
Good.
Good stuff. All right, guys.
It was the Reisenstein Conference.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
Yeah. All the issues were put on the table.
Yeah, we followed Dave and Ginny. That was all right. Well, take care, guys.
Yeah. We'll talk soon.
Yep.
Thanks for the ideas.
Aloha.
I got a lot of stuff I can exploit tonight.
Yeah, so it's the allegorical minimalist and the sonic slut signing off.
Yes. Sonic slut squared. Put that high-end sophistication in there.
All right.
Hey, bye. All right. Enjoy talking about Zappa. It's good to get the Zappa points in there.
Rock and roll.
All right. So, Lauren, you're still here.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, so we got Jason. Jason has to take over. He has to start talking. I mean, we need a break here, Jason. So you lead.
All right. I was hesitant to accept this Sonic Slut label, but I realize that we're all Sonic Sluts because we can't close our ears.
Right.
You're forced to hear the acoustic.
Damn, right. That's a good point. Yeah, right on.
And
cool.
And I've also been playing with this other idea of like how this general and particular that you're playing with, and how I guess like kind of identity politics kind of brought in like the 70s, like I guess like they say so-called neoliberalism brings in identity politics and like that comes in with like Margaret Thatcher and like society doesn't exist kind of thing. We're all just individuals. But now that that's like washed over and like this identity politics has kind of like taken over and the particular has like gone to the fullest, then yeah, we're kicked into this. The reverses into the general again, where there's this resistance to this identity politics of listening to the minority voices,
right?
Trying to
the particulars.
Yeah,
that's good sequence. And they need the different media structures need the particular. Coming back to the general is what the population is doing, but that's. They don't exist. That's not registered. The media is enhancing the particular. And they don't like Trump's generalizing. They call it lying.
Well, because he doesn't really attach it to any generalism.
Right.
He's generalizing, but he's not attaching it to any sort of group. There's not a lot of...
Right. You know... Maybe, you know, McClooney say in the 60s, private and public awareness has got confused. So Trump mm-hmm. has brought the private generalizing conversations that people all engage in as they try to assess what's happening in America. He brought that into the particulars of politics, and it's such a contrast that, you know, people project different negativities on what he's doing. But he's just generalizing out of context. You shouldn't be generalizing in the White House. You basically shouldn't be communicating at all. You don't tweet. You don't tell people what you're doing. You have a press conference once every 8 months or something. That's what Obama did. You let the people not notice you. And the content of Trump's expression is generalizations. Mexicans are homo perverts or whatever he said, you know, rat fuckers. He makes mass generalizations, which is what everybody's doing privately, because that's all you can do is make generalizations because there's too many particulars. So I think I've come up, you've prompted a very nice perception by me there, Jason. Thank you.
You're welcome, I guess.
That's why they say he doesn't know anything.
Yeah,
he generalizes.
He never talks about like the practicality of those generalizations.
Right.
Like
he doesn't
like,
say how we're going to get great again.
All this, yeah, he never says how they're going to. Never says how he's bringing the jobs back. Like he's advocating for an economic system that is not going to bring the jobs back. Really, at the end of the day, he's all about exporting jobs and taking advantage
no.
of overseas
hey,
markets and
Jason.
Whatnot.
He's created. Hundreds of millions of jobs. He gave me
in what? Yeah, in military, and destruction and shit. Like,
aw, those guys need a job. They can't get anything better.
Hey, Carolyn,
What is the United States producing outside of military hardware? Really, at the end of the day.
Well, that makes your computers better.
Coal.
They're the leading edge of technology. They make advanced stuff that then becomes a better computer. Better
software. Software-wise, but not hardware-wise. None of the hardware is built in America.
Well, that's all classified. They're on the moon building colonies. They're not telling you that stuff. But you gave me an idea. I saw this, a bit of the New York Times documentary where they were, the journalists were complaining that Trump changed every 20 minutes. So they couldn't get a meme going for a day's report. Too much happened during the day of his flip-flopping for them to write a report on it. So their newspapers, they're supposed to specialize in the details, and they're swamped by Trump's generalizations, which change every 6 hours. They can't get to do the particulars. If he did that consciously, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, like the way he oscillates between the two.
Yeah.
You can't get a fix.
They can't keep repeating his generalizations. They're too minuscule and repeated. They're too cliche. So they're trying to find stuff behind the scenes that exposes a particular weakness. But he's not a particular phenomenon. He's not a particularizing phenomenon.
No, highly unusual for sure.
But by doing the present. So you got to recognize the White House always does the present. And people don't recognize it. They don't recognize it in their lives.
Yeah. It's like the Voltaire kind of idea. If you just keep asking the other person questions and then they have to react. If you keep laying the groundwork, everyone else has to react to you. And it doesn't matter. What they're always one step behind because you're on a treadmill and you're laying down the groundwork that everyone else has to run along.
He's a satire on the function of the White House. This is the artistic part of himself. He's showing this focus on government, on the leadership, is bullshit. And so he's going to say, you guys want to focus on the head of the body politic? I'll show you what to focus on, and then he frustrates their focusing. That's a pretty good satire, because we don't really need that centralizing. The community's need to know has to be expressed another way, not through politics.
And it definitely needs to be more bioregionalism. There's like
I think it just should have me. I would spend the day defining each region's areas and biases and potential.
Hunger Games, right? My district's going on this season.
Yeah, Hunger Games. I saw that. That was David Bowie. No, wait a minute. I didn't see Hunger Games. That's something that's happened recently, right?
Yeah, it was a book series, and they made a bunch of movies about it. Yeah.
Right, which I don't know about. But I'm thinking of the Hunger Game or a David Bowie movie in the early 80s where he dealt with maybe vampire.
Talking about the Labyrinth.
I don't know if it was
the
Labyrinth.
Like the Goblin King?
No.
The Goblin King?
No. This is human perversity. Berlin consciousness. You know, like, I think it was with Catherine Deneuve. If you got your... Here, Google there. Can you check that?
No.
I think it was called Hunger.
Log.
I'll do it, you lazy fuck. I'll have to go over to my fucking Google. And I'll put in Catherine Deneuve Bowie and see if I was right. Bowie. What comes up? The Hunger.
I was right.
Hunger.
Yeah.
The Hunger, 1983. Yeah. An erotic horror film.
Yeah, I'm not familiar.
Directed by Tony Scott. He's the guy who died while making his next movie called Ion.
Interesting.
Who grunted? Who was that who grunted?
It was me.
Oh. Okay. Let me just check Tony Scott. Let's see if I'm right. He died about... 2011. Tony Scott. Yeah, 2012. August 2012. Yep. He died while working on Ion. Let's see if he... IMDb. Let's see if they list Ion. That was pretty amazing back then. No, Ion, it didn't get. What?
That's one of those mentions you mentioned.
I didn't get what you're saying.
That's all right. You talked about it, that what, on what use, the non-recorded edition. All the,
of Ion?
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, hell no, you're not making a movie named me. Okay.
Okay, okay, so on April 19, 2016, let's see. It says, his brother, Sir Ridley Scott, 74, the director of Alien, Blade Runner, and Gladiator, flew from London to Los Angeles because they found a suicide note at his office and notes to his loved ones. Tony Scott's Hollywood career had been at one of its most successful points. He just completed Out of the Furnace, which is due in cinemas next year, and he was planning a science fiction drama called Ion. Wow, that would have been pretty neat. And that was that article. Hard to get a date. No, 2012. He was only 68. Scott, 68, had been about to team up with Tom Cruise for a sequel to his biggest hit, Top Gun, from a suspension bridge. Okay, is that what? I didn't know that. So Ion was a Tom Cruise vehicle. Ooh.
Please enjoy the music while your party is being reached. Thank you for holding.
What's that all about? It was an invasion. So, Tom Cruise. Let's see if we put in Tom Cruise Ion. Are we still on? We might have been disconnected.
No, that was just okay. Really weird.
Right. IMDb. No, that's not helping. Not much coming up with Tom Cruise and Ion. Okay, back to you, Jason. I forgot. You're supposed to be carrying the load here. Carry on.
What else was I going to talk about?
Well, what are you doing? What are you thinking about? Are you too particular to discuss? Youth. Yeah, you're dealing with youth all the time.
No. Dealing with youth all the time.
Right?
So no... No narrative, all drama. Just
yeah.
Phatic,
it's like you specialize.
Over and over again.
Did you say phatic?
Yeah, phatic communication over and over and over again.
Well, it's dramatic. It's emphatic. These people got problems, but I guess the tension is so great, you keep it pleasant by doing phatic.
No. They keep it phatic. Like they don't
yeah,
want to.
Yeah, because tension is so great.
They don't want any. Yeah, they never want to talk about anything serious. It's all joking all the time.
Yeah,
and
because
they,
the problem.
And if they are, if they are serious, then you have to be serious. But most of the time they're joking. But you have to know when they're not joking. But they're
right.
Mad if you're joking when they want to be serious and they're serious when you want to joke and yada, 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 back and forth.
You have to, they're like autistic. You have to adapt to them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. You have to meet them where they're at, for sure.
This is just regular high school? Or younger?
No, he's social welfare.
I work with male teenage males who have been wrapped up in the youth criminal justice system, and they have the opportunity to go through juvenile detention like jail or go through this four-month program with me where they do educational stuff in the morning and outdoor rec and other life skills in the evening.
Right on. Very selfless.
So, yeah, I'm dealing with kids who haven't been in the school system for years. And